Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. This is a practical show done by a practical guy like me. Welcome to this 306th episode of the Handgun World Podcast. And, you know, I got some time here, got some free time, so I figured I would crank out something. And a subject caught my interest recently. Now, it's not a new subject. It's not something that I have avoided before. As a matter of fact, it's something that I've talked a lot about. But recently an article came out and there was a video that came out that, let's see, when was the video that came out? Oh, that was quite a while ago, but it was about like 4 or 5 years ago. But a recent article came out and things, and I want to talk about, once again, the subject of point shooting or instinctive shooting or reactive shooting, whatever name people want to get or to give it. Basically, it's shooting without completely using a total sight picture. Now, it's controversial, and I just ask you to have an open mind, okay? Because I'm going to present something to you, and I'm going to let you decide. All right. I'm not going to say you should embrace point shooting. I'm not going to say that you shouldn't embrace it. But I'm going to point out some things, and I'm going to let you decide, because that's the kind of guy I am. Don't you want to listen to that instead? Don't you want to listen to somebody that has an open mind and somebody that presents facts and let you, the independent thinker, decide? Okay, I hope that's the way you are. Don't listen to me all the time. Don't take what I say as the absolute truth all the time when it comes to handgun shooting and carrying and so forth. Because even though I've been doing this a while and do some instructing on the side, I have so much to learn. So, here's what I will start with. Now, I think most of you know Roger Phillips. If you don't, I mean, he's been on my show before. I've interviewed him here a couple of times. Roger is formerly with Suarez International. And, folks, I'm not going to get into all the politics and all the reasons why that he's not with Suarez International. But I think that Roger still has some pretty good things to teach, especially on the subject of point shooting or instinctive shooting, whatever you want to call it. Now, here's what I'm gonna say here right up front. I still hold an instructor position with Suarez International. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about putting up a class in June or July. And you'll be hearing more about that. So I still hold an instructor position at Suarez International. And Roger obviously is out doing his own thing now with fight-focused concepts. I do not wish to get into this controversy between Suarez International and Roger Phillips. I want to stay out of that, please. So don't drag me into it. I do want to talk about the merits of sighted fire and point shooting and let you decide. Fair enough? Hopefully you think so. Hopefully that we can get all that stuff and not, you know, get it out of our minds and not let all the controversy and stuff or let, you know, who used to work for who get in the way. So, having said that, Roger recently put out an article on his blog, and I will link to it in the show notes. So all you have to do is go to handgunworld.com. I'm going to link to the article by Roger that I'm going to share with you. I'm going to link to the video that I'm going to share with you. I'm going to link to some statistics and research and things that I've done on this episode. Okay, most of the time I do some pretty fairly extensive research before I put out an episode. I don't like just putting out conjecture, ideas, opinions without something to back it up. It's never really been my style here at the Handgun World Podcast. So let me share with you some stuff from Roger, and then I'm going to share with you the audio portion of a video, and then I'm going to also put in some of my 2 cents. But recently, there's been a decent amount of anti-point shooting talk. And so again, I'm going to paraphrase Roger's article here. I'm not going to quote it word for word. I'm not going to read it to you. That's boring, right? You ever notice that? You ever notice when somebody reads something to you, whether it's a news story or an article or whatever? You ever notice when they read something to you? Gosh, that's boring, isn't it? After a couple minutes, don't you want to just kind of pull your hair out and go, it's boring! I can read it myself. Why are you reading it to me? But So I'm going to paraphrase this stuff. I'm going to put a Bob Main twist, to, not a twist, but a Bob Main influence on this. Hopefully you don't mind. But there's been a lot of anti-point shooting talk. And, folks, first of all, I want to say that point shooting is not something new. And to borrow this from Roger Phillips, you know, he talks about the fact that point shooting has been going on a long time. Have you ever heard of names like Colonel Askins, Jelly Bryce, Bill Jordan, Colonel Fairbairn, I can never say his name right. Fairbairn or Fairbairn, Colonel Sykes, Darby's Rangers, and so forth. It's been around a long time. Matter of fact, if you think about the Old West gunfighters, think about that. Think about the Old West gunfighters who used to shoot from their hip or unconventional positions. Did they ever use the sights on their old revolvers? What do you think? How about even some of those guys that shot those lever-action rifles years and years ago? Did they always use the sights? Think about that. But think about the Old West gunfighters, right? They'd have these duels or these shootouts or whatever. Come on, you can't tell me that they always used perfect sighted fire shooting skills. Now, Roger brings up a very good point in this article. He says that a lot of the stuff that concerns him as a trainer is when combat-proven skill sets are just completely dismissed. And you know, that's what a lot of these anti-point shooters do. They take a combat-proven skill, like point shooting, and they just dismiss it. They say, well, you shouldn't do that. Now, let me ask you all a question, if you're listening to this show here. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever taken a class on point shooting, or have you ever had somebody in a class teach you some of the basic concepts of point shooting, or instinctive shooting, or shooting without completely getting a sight picture? I have. I've taken Roger's class. Okay? Also, I've seen some very good competition shooters that don't use their sights on every target, folks. I'm sorry, but they don't. If you think that they do, they don't. Some really good competitors, even though they might not say it, they're not seeing their sights 100% of the time. But guess what? They're making some really good hits, aren't they? So Roger brings out a good point here. He says that when combat-proven skill sets like this are just flat out thrown out and dismissed, that's concerning. You know why that's concerning? Because that's an instructor who's telling you, you don't need to learn this. It could save your life, could help you, but you don't need to learn it. And they have all kinds of reasons. Now, what kind of an instructor? Seriously. What kind of an instructor would tell you that you don't need to learn something that could possibly help you? Just think about that. Some trainers out there that dismiss point shooting, they're quoted as saying some of the stuff that they're seeing on the range is a concern to those of us that are trainers. Well, why? Why is it a concern? Okay? Some of the trainers out there say, you want to see your sights every chance you get. No kidding! Wow, is that ever an intelligent statement, isn't it? Woo-hoo! Tell me something new here. Boy, I tell you what, I'm sure glad now. You know what? After 5 years of doing this podcast and several years of training, and, you know, I figure I've probably got about 120 hours of personal training under my belt and teaching people and things like that, I wish I had learned this before. I wish I had learned the concept, the fact that you want to see your sights every chance you get. No kidding. Isn't that why there are sights on a pistol? But I got news for you. I know I'm being sarcastic here, so let me get off being sarcastic. You don't always get a chance to see your sights. And that's why I think these trainers that just flat out dismiss a skill set, I think that's why it's bad. You don't always get to see your sights. Of course you want to see your sights and use them if you get the chance. But what happens if you don't get the chance? And you know what? You're not always going to get the chance. A little later in this episode, I'm going to show you why you don't always get the chance. But do you want to lose your life? Or do you want to get severely attacked or maimed or whatever? Because you didn't learn a skill set? Because some trainer said, you don't need to know that. Come on. So really, the difference between the people who do embrace point shooting or instinctive shooting basically comes down to whether they're open-minded, in other words, they're inclusive, or they're closed-minded. Basically, that's what it is. Open-minded versus closed-minded. And when you look at the fight, when you look at the realities of a fight, and Roger Phillips is good at talking about this, when you look at the realities of a fight inside of a typical civilian attack, okay, now let's talk about civilian attacks here. I'm going to get into law enforcement a little bit later. But it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear that we're going to be in a reactionary situation, not proactive. The bad guy is most likely, at least in the beginning, going to dictate the terms of the fight. You're going to be in a reactionary situation. So you're going to be behind the reactionary curve. And this is huge. This is huge. And at certain distances, folks, you may not be able to get on your sights. I make a big deal about sights. Matter of fact, recently I was making a big deal about the new Trigicon HDs that I have on a few pistols that I'm really liking. A lot of people out there make a big deal about excess big dot sights, you know, especially for people with old eyes and things like that. Fine and dandy. Good. There's some very, very good sights out there. But what if you don't get a chance to use them? Okay. Roger says we're going to be behind in the reactionary curve. He also, and this is something we've all known, 70% of all gunfights are in low light. So unless you've taken a night class, and recently I had Ben Branham and I talk about a night class that we were doing, unless you've taken a night class, what happens if you're in low light, you don't have a chance to use your sights because you can't see them, or you can't see the target that well? What are you going to do? The other thing you got to remember is in a fight, most people are going to be moving very, you know, very dynamically. I've talked about that millions and millions of times. Your sympathetic nervous system is going to get activated, okay? Now, your pupils are going to dilate and so forth. You're going to have that adrenaline dump that everybody talks about. And here's something that a lot of people don't talk about. You're going to have a desire to just lock in on that bad guy with your eyes. Okay? It's a natural phenomenon. That bad guy and the gun or the knife or the bat or the club or even his fist that's trying to come at you, that's what you're going to lock in on. You're going to lock in on that threat because you are going to be either very much afraid or in fight mode. Okay? Human body goes into fight or flight. You're going to be into fight mode. Now, Roger also says there's a high possibility for the integration of hand-to-hand along with the use of a handgun. Think about that. And since so many fights happen inside of 3 yards, right, we know that. We know that probably over half of all gunfights are 3 yards or less. There could be some hand-to-hand stuff, which also means you may not be able to always use your sights. So what are these people teaching? The people who are saying don't learn point shooting, what are they teaching you to handle these types of situations that I'm talking about? What is their alternative? What are they teaching? What is it that they suggest you do? A lot of them say, well, I'm not a big fan of point shooting. You're going to hear from one coming up that says that. Okay, I get that. You're not a big fan of point shooting. What are you a big fan of if you can't use your sights, if you have to engage in some hand-to-hand combat, if both happen? What are you a fan of? What is in that instructor's curriculum that will allow him or her to teach you what to do in the situation where you can't use your sights? Just think about that. Now, here's another anti-point shooting argument. It's a sad state of affairs to start teaching law enforcement officers or soldiers to just shoot in the area where they think there might be a bad guy. Let me tell you something, folks. That's a weak argument. That is so bad. I'll say that again. You know what they say? It's a sad state of affairs to start teaching law enforcement operators or soldiers to just generally shoot in the area of the bad guy. That's not taught. That's not what point shooting is all about. That's not what instinctive shooting is all about. You're not being taught to just shoot in the area. By the way, that's a violation of one of the rules of a gunfight, isn't it? Know your target and what's beyond it? That's a violation of a gunfight rule. Any instructor worth their salt is not going to do that, and point shooting instructors don't teach you that. And by the way, if somebody does say that, if somebody just says pick an area and shoot in that area, leave the class right away. Come up with an excuse to politely just pack up your things and go, because that's an unsafe, terrible instructor that doesn't know what he or she is talking about. Hey, anybody teaching point shooting that's decent does not teach you to shoot in an area. They teach that you focus on a very, very, very small spot on the bad guy, and you use hand-eye coordination to shoot for that very small spot. But you identify your target first, and you identify a spot. That's a far cry from just shooting in the area of a bad guy. So anybody who uses that as an argument against point shooting, that is weak. That's very weak. Now, here's one of the weakest arguments that I've ever heard. And again, this comes from Roger's article. He pulls this from other people. He says, for law enforcement officers, point shooting is probably not the road to go down for liability issues. We need to make sure that we account for every round that is fired. Hey, doesn't that also apply to civilians? And to a certain extent, doesn't that apply to soldiers? Hey, I'm calling on all you military veterans out there. Weren't you at times also required to account for every shot that you fired? Law enforcement always, whether they're using sighted fire or not, they have to account for every round that's fired. Come on, who doesn't in this day and age? What a weak argument. I'm going to talk about law enforcement hit ratios in a little while here. I got some data. By the way, I do some research here that I'm going to present to you. I don't just throw out opinion here like someone you're going to hear from or some other people who are against this concept. I do some research. The hit ratio for law enforcement officers, the nationally recognized hit ratio, is what, 15 to 25%, 30 to 35 at the max, and supposedly they're using sighted fire. Well, if they're only hitting with 25 or 30%, guess what? Over 70% of their shots are missing. Aren't they accountable for those? Now, I don't blame cops for having such a bad hit ratio, and Roger says he doesn't either. Okay? Unfortunately, hey folks, I love police officers. And you know, lately there's been a lot of police bashing lately. I don't police bash. This is not cop bashing. And I hate this on the news, all the cop bashing that's been going on. But I'm gonna say this, unfortunately, a lot of law enforcement officers, they just don't get good enough firearms training. They don't. A lot of them just don't. Either the department doesn't want to pay for it, or their department doesn't believe in it, or I don't know what the case is. But there sure are a lot of law enforcement people coming through classes I teach and other classes that I've taken, and it's just simply amazing. Okay? But the sighted fire always methodology leaves the officer with nothing to fall back on when he can't get to his sights. And it's the same thing with the civilian. It leaves you nothing to fall back on. So I asked the question, if law enforcement are only averaging 25, maybe 30, 35%, if I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, of a hit ratio, how's that sighted fire working out for them? Think about that. Let's say they hit with, let's say it's a law enforcement officer who's really good, and let's say he hits 60% of the time. Now that's a stretch, right? Hitting 60% of the time, unless he's a very, very well-trained cop. How's that sighted fire working out? It means he's missing 40% of the time. What's happening? You know what's probably happening? I bet those misses are when he can't get on his sights and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't have a technique because he's never been taught that. Now, here's another weak argument, and then I'm going to play an audio clip for you to hear. Other people who are against the point shooting or instinctive shooting concept will say things like this. It doesn't mean that if we're at contact distances, that we shouldn't just point our weapon and squeeze the trigger till the threat's gone. It means that if we have a target that allows us to get on our sights, we need to make every effort to see those sights. Again, that's almost like the same weak argument I said before. Of course. Of course. Who would deny that? That if the threat allows you, if the threat allows you, you make every effort to use your sights. Now, I'm going to skip forward in Roger's article, and I'm going to talk about contact shooting or contact distance. And Roger brings up a good point here. You all need to know this. Okay, contact distance. Okay, well, what is contact distance? Now, people that have good instincts begin to consider retention area at around 4 yards. In other words, if you're shooting from retention, it's around 4 yards. And if you've ever done the Tueller drill, you know what I'm talking about. You know, the Tueller drill, 21 feet, 7 yards. But think about even inside of that. Think about 4 yards. If two guys were to stand apart from each other 4 yards and reach out towards each other, the distance between their extended arms would be very, very small. Okay? A yard or two. That's it. Picture two guys 4 yards, which is 12 feet apart. Okay? And they reach out. Let's pick, have them put guns in their hands. Or have one guy have a gun in his hand, the other guy have a knife in his hand. And just reach out towards each other while you're standing there. What's the distance going to be between gun and knife? Not much. Okay? So Roger says it's his opinion that you need to have a retention concept that allows you to be the very best inside of that 4 yards. What is your technique? What is your technique for this kind of contact shooting? Because really this is contact distance. And if you want to shrink it down even more, if you want to say that 4 yards is 16 feet. Did I say 12 feet before? That was bad. 4 yards is what am I talking about? What an idiot. No, 4 yards is 12 feet. I can't add. Okay, but what if it's 3 yards and it's 9 feet? Oh, man, it's late at night. Sorry. You have to forgive me. Basic math is tough. But anyway, do you have a concept for contact shooting? Do you have a technique if you're 3 or 4 yards apart? You might not be able to get on your sights is what I'm saying. Just because I can't figure out how many feet 4 yards is, I can tell you that if somebody is 4 yards away from me and they're coming at me quickly or even begin to start coming at me, I probably don't want to draw my pistol, extend it, fully extended towards them to get a sight picture and try to press the trigger. He's going to close that distance real quickly in 4 yards, and I'm going to have my extended arms with a pistol in my hand, and I'm going to be in a world of hurt. Because if I can't get that shot off, he's taking that pistol away from me, and I'm screwed. All right, or he's already stabbed me with the knife, or cut me with the knife, or cut my arms, or cut my wrists, or beat my head with the bat, or whatever he's got, before I can probably draw and extend my arms. So that's a bad, bad concept, in my opinion. You know, keep in mind, the idea that two people are going to stand 4 yards apart and just stand still and fight each other is slim to none. Especially if two people have guns. You really think two people have guns are going to stand 4 yards, 3 yards away from each other and start blasting away at each other? Come on now, folks. Come on. Okay? You're going to be moving. Okay? So it's a fluid environment. So Roger says you better have some skills. You better have some force-on-force skills. You better have some hand-to-hand skills. You better have some instinctive shooting skills, some point shooting skills. Because you might need it at that distance, which is where most fights occur anyway. Think about that. All right, I have a video clip I want you to hear from a fairly well-known trainer and fairly well-known firearms establishment that uses some of these weak arguments that I'm talking about. But again, I want you to be the judge. I am throwing some opinion in here. Maybe I shouldn't. I want you to be the judge. And folks, I welcome comments, good, bad, or indifferent. All I ask you is do one thing. If you have a comment or you disagree with what I'm saying, I ask you to do two things. First of all, be polite about it. Second of all, have some clear-cut evidence to back it up, which I'm going to present some to you here shortly, but I want you to hear this first.
The Brady Campaign is telling America that 85 people are killed with guns every day. What they are not saying is that nearly 60% of those deaths are suicides. Subtract those, justifiable self-defense shootings, and some very rare accidents, and the real number is 33 deaths each day. But the federal government tells us 80% of those deaths are gang violence. So the number the Brady should be talking about is 27 gang shootings a day, or less than 3 each for the 10 largest cities in the country. The Brady campaign needs to come clean, for once. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Hey, I'm just decided I would talk a little bit here today about some of the stuff we're seeing on the range that is of a concern to those of us that are out there trying to be trainers in this industry. And one of the things that we keep seeing, it seems, is people want to talk about threat-focused shooting, instinctive shooting, point shooting, whatever you might want to call it. And one of the big issues we have with that is that having been shot at and returned fire at an enemy, you do want to see your sights every chance you get. And I think it's kind of a sad state of affairs if we're starting to train our law enforcement or our soldiers to just generally shoot in the area where they think there's a target. I guess with soldiers, there might be a little bit of that with using machine guns at farther distances, heavy weapons, things like that, things of that nature. But when it comes to law enforcement, I think that threat-focused shooting or point shooting, instinctive shooting, whatever you want to call it, is probably not the road to go down. For liability issues, for one, we need to make sure we account for every round we fire. Now, that doesn't mean if we're contact shooting or, we've got somebody right on top of us that we're not just going to point our weapon and start to squeeze the trigger until that threat is eliminated. What it means is if we have a target that allows us to get our sights up on that target, we need to make every effort to use our sights. And I think that you'll have a lot better downrange results once you do that. The other thing that we often see is when we try to do some of our real speed shooting in the courses that we teach, guys think that we stop looking at our sights and we'll just get that accuracy because we're so close to the target. We try to call every single shot that we fire. So when you see some of the drills that we do on video, we are watching our sights. If you watch the tri-lambda drill or any of those drills like that, we're still watching our sights, every single shot. And we, to dial that in to make sure that the folks that are doing this are watching their sights, we'll change target locations, we'll put hostages in the overlaid on some of the bad guy targets as well, and you'll see that guys can shoot just as fast when they're reading their sights, and they'll have much better accuracy. So I just want to talk about that for a minute, threat-based shooting, threat-focused shooting, point shooting, reflexive fire. I'm not a big fan of that. I think you need to read your sights, read them quickly, and eliminate the threat. You'll have a lot better luck if you're actually watching your sights. All right, that's all we got.
Hi, this is Paul Lathrop from the Politics and Guns Podcast. You're listening to Bob Main on the Handgun World Podcast.
But what if the bad guy doesn't give you that opportunity, sir? Did you guys hear some of the arguments that I was talking about? Now, of course that's where that came from. I just want to ask you, the audience listening to this podcast, this episode, I want to ask you a few questions. Does a basketball have sights on it? Right? Now, what a silly question, right? Does a basketball have sights on it? No, of course it doesn't. But when a basketball player makes a three-point shot, for example, what's he using? He's using hand-eye coordination. You know why? Because he's done it so many times. Does a football player have, or does a football have sights on it? No, but there are some quarterbacks that can stand there, not look at the football, look at the receiver, with some 300-pound guys coming towards their head that want to chop it off, and they can throw that football in a very tight spot. Why? Because the football has sights? No, because they're using their hand-eye coordination because they've practiced it over and over and over and over again. And there's bad guys coming after that football player, so to speak. There's guys that want to stop that basketball player from making that three-point shot. How many of you play golf? How many of you listening to this podcast play golf? Does a golf ball have sights on it? Does the golf club have sights on it? When you line up your golf shot, are you looking through some sight? No, you're using, you know what you're doing? You're imagining that shot. You're visualizing that shot. You swing the club in a way you've practiced hundreds and thousands of times, and you hope that you swing that club in the right spot to propel that ball using your hand-eye coordination to the general spot on the fairway or on the green where you want that ball to go. Okay? It's hand-eye coordination. Young people know a lot about hand-eye coordination, especially those that play video games. Right? They know a lot about hand-eye coordination. Have you ever seen like a tennis player, for example? You ever watch a tennis match, professional tennis match? Some of these really good guys? Okay? A lot of times they're using hand-eye coordination. You have to keep your eye on the ball, of course, when you're playing golf, when you're playing tennis. But can you really see with clarity the point that the golf ball hits, excuse me, the point that the club hits the ball? Can you really see that with clarity? Heck no. All right? Well, it's the same with shooting, folks. It's just like a basketball player trying to take a three-point shot. Okay? He doesn't have time sometimes to line that up perfectly. He's got some big, huge, tall guys with their hands in the air that within half a second or less are going to be in front of him trying to block that shot or trying to derail that shot so he doesn't make it. So it's hand-eye coordination, okay? Just like a lot of these athletes do. So, again, you heard in that audio clip, and by the way, I will link to the video. You can go to handgunworld.com for this episode, and you can watch the video. But, you know, you hear things like, well, you know, if the bad guy allows you to get on your sights. Duh! Yeah, we know that. We know that. But what tools are they teaching you in case you cannot get on your sights? Now, I don't just put stuff out there because that's what I think. I like to do some research. So let me give you some research, and I'm going to link to this research study. And you can look at it for yourself, okay? Here's a study. There's a couple of them here. One is the New York Police Department gunfight deaths, okay? In other words, cop deaths. What's the contact distance? From touching each other to 3 feet, in a several years time span, it was 86 officers lost their lives. From three to six feet, it's not very far away, is it? I'm not talking about yards. I'm talking about feet. Okay? 1 yard to 2 yards. 119 officers. Now, as the distance gets greater, the number of officer deaths decreases. 6 to 15 feet, 24 officers. 15 to 25, 12 officers. You see the numbers going down? Why do you think that is? I'll bet you because from contact distance to about 6 to 8 feet, they didn't have any skills. They weren't taught any skills what to do. They weren't taught hand-to-hand combat. They weren't taught any force-to-force. They weren't taught how to draw that pistol out of the holster and shoot immediately, because what are they taught? Get on your sights, get on your sights, get on your sights. Takes too long. Takes too long to get on your sights. Now, what is a gunfight? Okay, according to this research article here that I'm referenced to. Well, as defined by the NYPD, a gunfight occurs when officers confront assailants armed with firearms. Interesting point. Duh. No matter. No wonder it's called a gunfight. So you see the officer deaths, you see the number of officer deaths go down when you increase the distance in a gunfight. Now, according to this research article, I want you to go to my website, handgunworld.com. I'll put a link to the article. I want you to read the whole thing and look at all the statistics. But the latest statistics in this article shows that 103 shots were fired by cops at the perpetrator, 22 made the hit. I'll say that again, the latest statistics. And, of course, they got better over the years because better training, right? But still, getting better is not saying much. They got a little bit better, not much. Okay? 103 shots fired by cops, 22 hit. You can do the math. And gee, if there are more cop deaths in gunfights at close distances, don't you think it'd be the same for civilians? Don't you think? There's not that much difference, is there? Okay? And in this same article, it says the number of NYPD officers that were involved in shootings, listen to this, 0 to 2 yards, 69%. Is the distance. I mean, not the number of cops. The number of cops who were actually in shooting instances was 69% at 2 yards or less. 69% at 2 yards or less. And guess what the hit ratio was? Guess what the hit ratio was at 2 yards or less? 38%. 38%. Now, someone might say, well, yeah, sure, if they would get on their sights, Bob, if they would use their sights, maybe they would hit better than 38%. No. No. It probably is because they can't effectively use their sights. As a matter of fact, how many times have you heard about police officers being debriefed? And they say they don't even remember using their sights. They couldn't even tell you if they saw any sights because they probably didn't. Now, many of you have probably heard of Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. Okay, Dave Grossman made a presentation at the Southern Police Institute's annual alumni conference. It was several years ago. Okay, but he used statistics that were, I'm pretty sure, generated by, of course, the NYPD. And there was a mean hit ratio of 15%. So, again, depending on who you talk to, who's doing the analysis, it's what, 15 to 38%, kind of like what I was talking about earlier. So what's going on here? What's going on? If these people who are against point shooting and are only teaching sighted fire, how come they can't achieve better than a 38% hit ratio? That's atrocious, and that's doing pretty well. Think about that. And you want to talk about liability? If you're only hitting with 38% of your shots, what kind of liability do you have with the other 62% who are missing the target? What kind of liability is that? Point shooting does not increase the liability. A properly taught point shooting course, and a properly taught point shooter actually increases his or her hit ratio at the shorter distances because they know what to do. They know how to use hand-eye coordination to make the shot. They know how to aim small, miss small. They know how to find a focal point. Okay? They know how to use the metal on meat concept. They know how to orient their slide properly to the ground and to the target. Okay? They know how to draw from the holster and fire from the hip or fire from a compressed contact ready position. Okay? This is what you're going to learn. And it's been proven on the range. It's been proven on the range. People have said, oh man, I can't believe at 5 yards I'm making hits without using my sights. Shooting from a compressed contact ready. Shooting from the hip. I've seen students do it in class. I've seen them done. And I've seen it done with regularity. I've seen it done a lot. Okay? Don't forget, a hit on the bad guy is bad for you and good for him. A hit on the bad guy is good for you and bad for him. And a hit on the bad guy probably means it's not a stray bullet from a miss that you made. Okay? So think about that. All right. Anybody that tells you you have to always shoot these tiny little groups using sighted fire, well, if that causes you, because you're fumbling around and your techniques are not sound, and if that causes you to wait too long to get on your sights, and then all of a sudden maybe you fire a round that misses because you fire a round when you're not supposed to, or whether it's too late, or the gun got deflected away from you, or whatever, now you got a stray bullet hanging out there in space, coming down and landing somewhere. But if you had the hand-eye coordination, if you had the point shooting skills, if you had the skills necessary, the reflective skills, you might make a hit on the bad guy, and you don't have a stray round flying around in the air that's going to come down and possibly hurt somebody and be a liability. So, the opposite is probably true. Now, is point shooting something that you can get the first time and be a master at it? No. You got to practice it, and you got to practice it extensively. But how about aimed shooting? How about sighted fire shooting? Excuse me. I meant to say sighted fire shooting. Is that something you can master right away? No. How many of you listening to this podcast right now, it took you a long time to master sighted fire shooting? Maybe you still don't have it mastered. Do you miss? Do you miss with your sights? Okay. Are your groups wide with your sights? Are your groups sometimes wider than you'd like them to be with your sights? What's up with that? Probably because you haven't practiced enough. You haven't trained enough. So that's a skill that has to be mastered too. And again, I finish with this, okay? This is what I'm going to finish this segment with. Anybody who wants to say that point shooting or instinctive shooting is not something you should learn, all I ask is, what are you teaching students to do inside of, let's say, 2 to 3 yards if they can't use their sights? What are you teaching them to do? Okay? Don't be exclusive, folks. If you're against point shooting, don't be exclusive. Don't say it's something that you should never teach or that you're not a big fan of that. You should be a big fan of that, as well as you are a big fan of sighted fire. Okay? As well as you're a big fan of hand-to-hand combat. As well as you're a big fan of force-on-force. As well as all the tools in a person's bag you should be a big fan of. And you should have it in your curriculum to teach that. And don't be putting videos out saying, well, I'm not a big fan of point shooting and it's a big liability, acting like someone should not learn it. Why should somebody not learn a tool that they can have available to them? If you're going to build a structure, if you're a carpenter or you want to try to be a carpenter or you want to build something on your own, aren't you going to have plans and tools? And aren't you going to want to use the best tool for the job? This is no different, folks. This is using the best tool for the job. Your job? Keep the bad guy from killing you. Your tool? Your gun and your techniques. All right? And like Ben Branham says, I'm going to borrow this from Ben Branham, Modern Self-Protection Podcast. Your gun is just a tool. Your mind is the weapon. Train it well. So, quick break, and I'll be right back.
Whenever you see big city mayors campaigning for gun control, rows of uneasy-looking police officers are forced to stand behind the mayors. The reason our police friends are uneasy is they don't buy into the mayor's political scam. The president of the Black Police Caucus said his members believe there should be no gun rationing, and nearly 100% of their membership thinks criminals are able to obtain guns through illegal means. Likewise, 94% of the National Association of the Chiefs of Police believe that citizens should be able to purchase firearms for self-defense and sporting purposes. Maybe this is why billionaire New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called the 32,000-member Fraternal Order of Police a fringe group, because unlike Michael, cops know who the good guys are, namely you, not Bloomberg. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, back from break, I just want to add a couple things that I forgot to add. What about baseball pitchers? Isn't that a great example of the hand-eye coordination? All right, what's the distance in professional baseball? I think it's 90 feet from the pitcher's mound to home plate. Throwing that little baseball, some of them throw it almost 100 miles, or some of them throw it over 100 miles an hour. Some of them throw a baseball over 100 miles an hour. Now, what about this? What about the hitter? Does a baseball bat have any sights on it? Heck no. And this hitter hits this little baseball traveling 100 miles an hour, and he hits it with a baseball bat that's not very big. And some of them are so doggone good at that hand-eye coordination, they hit that baseball out of the park, and it's a home run. Did any of that require any precision aiming? Now, you know what? Those hitters have practiced that so many times. The hitters have practiced that so many times, okay? It's hand-eye coordination. The pitchers have practiced it so many times. It's also their hand and arm-eye coordination that lets them, hopefully most of the time, pitch that ball exactly where they want. So you decide, folks, you decide. You decide whether point shooting or aim, or instinctive shooting or reactive shooting, whatever kind of silly name you want to give it, you decide whether it's something that you think that you should learn. I just wanted to throw some stuff out there. And I also wanted to put some research out there just so you know that I'm not just shooting from the hip. Ha ha ha. No pun intended. But seriously, I wanted to put some research out there just so you don't think that I'm throwing out opinions and conjecture without any without any statistics to back it up. As I think we have heard from an instructor, and many other instructors do the same thing. Once again, if you have a dissenting opinion, that's fine. Give me facts. Back it up. Show me where point shooting is a bad thing. Show me where point shooting or instinctive shooting hurts someone's defensive ability. Okay? Show me where that is a bad thing. Show me where it's a tool that someone should not have in their skill set. Show me where that's a skill that should not be given. I want to leave you with this. There are a lot of classes that are coming up. I'm probably going to be scheduling a Suarez International course in the summer. It's not going to be in Texas. It's probably going to be outside of Texas. I just want to let you know that. Once I have everything finalized, I think my cancer treatments and everything will be finished by then. I think I will be well enough by then to be able to teach that. So look for that coming up on the menu at handgunworld.com. Speaking of what's coming up, in May, in Sioux Falls, Ben Branham and I are traveling up there to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, May 16th and 17th. We're going to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, a two-day class. The early bird special is over, but still the investment is very reasonable. We're going to team up with Paul Lathrop from the Politics and Guns podcast, and we're going to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. Ben Branham and I are going to be there in Sioux Falls, May 16th and 17th of this year, 2015. And for all of you who did not get a chance to go to the Glenn Tate class, the class with Glenn Tate and some of the members of the team, well, we're repeating it this year. If you didn't get a chance to go last year because it sold out months and months in advance, you better get moving to sign up. That's also on the website, handgunworld.com. Check that out. That's in August of 2015. Check out all of our class reviews, by the way. You'll see what people are saying, the kinds of positive stuff. Don't forget, if you're going to make an Amazon purchase, you can support my show because I don't run commercials on this show from sponsors. Make your Amazon purchase on my Amazon store. You can see an Amazon store page at handgunworld.com. And finally, don't forget about the Shooters Club. We're going to have a new video going up on the Shooters Club pretty soon. For $75 a year or only $8 a month, you can watch Ben and I on video teaching a lot of techniques. And it's the next best thing to being at one of our training classes. Not as good, but it's better than not having any training at all. And it's all instructional videos on how to fight with a handgun. Yeah, maybe even a little bit of instinctive shooting or point shooting in there. I don't know. You'll have to join to find out. Well, folks, I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. By the way, I forgot to give out the voicemail. If you want to leave a voicemail on this, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Thanks for listening to a practical show done by a practical guide. That's me. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.